for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Welcome to another edition and episode of Quest Community Vibration, better known as Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. You see, music is like poetry and has a message, and history like a diamond shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can comprehend like definition. Now, news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. I'm asking you to now pull back our musical curtain, see and hear the contribution of our diaspora, and you will find our quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, indeed, vibrations. So thank you once again for joining us to hear a different perspective of our community. This week's program starts with student host Walter Pierce, with a focus on Reverend Al Sharpton of the week. His definition continues on financial literacy, examining the definition of the word bond. Our curtain segment features Robert Nestor Marley. And, of course, we have Tanisha Garner, Mr. Shelton Harris, and others on the line contributing in our conversation and making comments. Now, without any further ado, I'd like to bring on our student host so he can kick off our morning show, Mr. Walter Pierce. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations, live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. Now, again, my diamond segment for this week is on Al Sharpton. And see, a native of Brooklyn, New York, Reverend Sharpton preached his first sermon at the age of 4 at the historic Washington Temple Church of God in Christ. He was ordained at the age of 10, and by 13, he had been appointed youth director of New York's Operation Breadbasket economic arm to Dr. King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference. A fierce believer in the philosophy of nonviolent direct action protest, Reverend Sharpton founded National Action Network in 1991 and headquartered the organization in Harlem, all the while serving from 1993 to 1998 as director of the Minister's Division for Reverend Jackson's Rainbow Push Coalition. Reverend Sharpton's foray into electoral politics resulted in historic and groundbreaking runs for the U.S. Senate in 1992 and 1994, and he nearly forced a runoff in the Democratic primary for mayor of New York City in 1997. His noteworthy presidential run in 2004 brought thousands of new voters into the electoral process and repositioned himself as a trusted progressive who centered critical issues like a living wage, gun reform, and voting rights as a cornerstone to his campaign. In 2004, at the request of the Democratic nominee, John F. Kerry, Reverend Sharpton delivered a rousing primetime speech at the Democratic National Convention in Boston. The author of 3 books, Reverend Sharpton is a frequent lecturer on the civil rights and political issues that has lent his expertise to several corporate diversity councils at Pepsi, Walmart, and Charter Communications. He has received numerous awards, including the Arnold Washington Award from the Congressional Black Caucus. He also honored with the Mandela Legacy Hope and Success Empowerment Award in recognition of his long history of achievements in advancing civil rights causes around the world. In 2017, he received the prestigious James Joyce Award from the Literacy and Historic Society of the University College in Dublin, Ireland. And that concludes my segment on Al Sharpton. And as you can see, Al Sharpton is a man of many talents, whether it's with preaching, politics, whether, you know, it's either just talking to people or even movies, because he's been in a good amount of movies. The most notable, Malcolm X, he was in. And he runs his own radio and TV broadcast. So, you know, Al Sharpton is very respected among a lot of people. And, you know, even though he failed multiple times for a political office, you know, he still was able to make an impact through his preaching, through him traveling around the country, giving sermons, talking about issues that pertain to our society. I know he was somebody who was a key part. And when, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement was at its peak, you know, in 2020, where George Floyd was killed. You know, he was out there with the family preaching, and you could see him actually on CBS when they had the funeral for George Floyd. You know, he was there talking about, you know, issues and, you know, the life of George Floyd. So, just in summary, a great person, you know, that a lot of people should really look into. He has movies, he has radio shows if you ever want to listen to it. And yeah, this is student host Walter Pierce on 89.5 WSOU.
Okay, we're back. I want to come to Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, I have to ask you a critical question as it pertains to Reverend Al Sharpton. It seems that he's not without controversy and definitely not without being outspoken. But there has been an opposite side where people have said, you know, they just didn't like Reverend Al Sharpton for whatever reason. Can you give a critical analysis or what do you think about Reverend Al Sharpton?
Yeah, when I was listening to Wolf to talk about him, those were the same kind of questions that came up in my mind. Because it seems as if, you know, he's always in the middle of some kind of controversy. But he's always been, at least I think, he's always tried to be on the side of the positive, trying to look for the right thing. But, you know, even people within our community have, like, a lot of negative connotations about him. Think he's like an ambulance, like a chaser, and every time he just tries to get his face in the middle of something. And, you know, and the dominant society also is like, you know, why is he here all the time? You know, and but even through all of that, you know, he still, whenever somebody needs help or he feels like they need help, he's always been there for folks. You know, and it's hard to be on the right side of anything because there's always going to be somebody on the left side. And you're always going to have some kind of controversy. But the key is to be able to do it and not worry about what other people feel because you have to live for your own beliefs. And I think he does that.
Okay. Thank you very much for that critical analysis and insight. I want to bring in Tanisha Gardner. Good morning, Tanisha, and Mr. Harris, good morning to you, too. Please, my apologies. Tanisha, yes, good morning. What do you think about Reverend Al Sharpton? Same question, basically.
Good morning, everybody. I don't know what I think about Al Sharpton. I know you've been around forever, I guess, compared to, the other civil rights leaders that we had. And I guess that, you know, critical times and critical measures, I guess they passed away, but I guess he was different. So it's like, I don't know. I guess it's like a two-edged sword. You know, it's like, what progression have we really made? So it's like, yes, we made it, but how do we, I guess, maximize, I guess, our true potential? And when we do have, you know, certain situations within the confines of what we're going through. So I don't know. I guess it's like it's mixed. And plus I'm a younger generation, so it just makes me think like, okay, what do we do? How do we get the leaders that we need for our generation to create the change that's coming up for, and be able to train, you know, the younger generations so they can be able to be impactful and have the right tools to be able to fight and to be able to build. So that's what I get from it.
Okay. And I will take the liberty to add in that many times a lot of people get the wrong impression about Reverend Al Sharpton, and they think that he's actually running to tragedy, when in fact, when tragedy occurs, when we've had your George Floyd or in Ferguson, the families have actually reached out to contact the National Action Network and request the presence of Reverend Al Sharpton. He's not picking up the phone, calling, inviting himself. The families are inviting him. And what the controversy really is are the people who just show up in protest. And sometimes it's been, okay, well, you're not from our neighborhood or community. Why are you here? Not realizing that the family has requested his presence in many situations. I know that because I've heard him say that. And I actually followed the National Action Network. And it's someplace where you know, you can go if you feel that you need help as it pertains to the civil rights and you need some type of activism. You need to be able to push the button for some type of activist activity to speak in your favor. And to my knowledge, they have to sort out the people that they're going to help and sometimes maybe the people that they're not able to assist. So without any further ado, I'd like to continue musically. Right. But before I do, what do you think about the analysis that has been given from Mr. Harris, myself, and Tanisha, Walter?
Yes, I feel like it is those very important information added, you know, about the Al Sharpton, you know, actually being invited. That's actually really important to highlight because it shows that people really want his presence and understand that him being there is going to draw a lot of attention and gain a lot of listeners, just a lot of people, you know, respect him. So that was a really good point there.
Okay. And one point, Walter, that I did forget to mention, he was a confidant of James Brown.
Yeah,
that's right. The musician, the singer,
James Brown. James Brown helped, you know, raise him into the popular society.
Well, that being said, there's more that we can say, right, about the Reverend Al Sharpton, but thank you for your presentation because you've done an excellent job. And now we continue and return with the music.
Singing, don't worry about a thing.
Okay. So we're back. Walter, I'd like to turn it back over to you. Good morning again.
Yes, good morning. And for my second segment of today, it is definitely continue. This segment provides listeners with words and a meaning so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And my definition for this week is a bond. And, you know, a bond is a loan from an investor to a borrower, such as a company or government. The borrower uses the money to fund its operations, and the investor receives interest on the investment. The market value of a bond can change over time. You know, a bond is a fixed income instrument, which is one of the three main asset classes or groups of similar investment frequently used in investing. Most investment portfolios should include some bonds, which help balance out the risk over time. If stock markets plummet, bonds can help cushion the blow. And, yeah, a little bit more about a bond, you know. A bond is a loan to a company or government that pays investors a fixed rate of return over a specific time frame. And bonds are a key ingredient for a balanced portfolio. And really what they mean by that is a lot of times either the government or private companies realize that they need more money. So what they'll do is they'll go to investors in bonds, and, you know, they will request a bond. And what they'll do is they'll give them, you know, a set time frame of when the money be paid back with an interest rate and, you know, just a time frame. And, you know, people with bonds invest in that. And it's safe because, you know, a stock market, it could go up and down. It could be unpredictable at times, sometimes the stock market. And, you know, you could sometimes lose money in the stock market. You won't always gain. But a bond is more safer because it allows for you to know when you're going to get your full return of money back and, you know, the interest rate that you're going to get. And it's more secure because you don't have to worry about anything, you know, plummeting or anything rising. It's going to be whatever the person who requested the bond or the company or government requested, it's going to be that amount. So you'll know how much you'll be getting. And, you know, people also, they sell bonds as well. Everybody doesn't always keep it for the duration of time. So, you know, if you feel like you don't want this bond anymore, you don't want to invest anymore, you could just, you know, you sell it to another investor. And you could always repurchase it and stuff like that if you feel like it's going to help you in the long term. So really, that's really what I have for bonds, you know. So if you really do get into the stock market, don't only worry about, you know, stocks primarily. You should also worry about bonds as well, because it's going to help balance it out and make sure that you also have a safe amount of income coming into your portfolio. So besides that, this is student host Walter Pierce on 89.5 WSOU.
And we're back. You know, I just want to start out by saying, originally when I introduced Fables into our program, it was to kind of link it up to mental health. And a lot of times, the lessons that we may or may not have learned as children, we still have to learn as adults. But if we can still learn, it doesn't matter when you learn a lesson, as long as it contributes to your personal growth. Now, I'm going to try to make that attempt once again today, this morning, by bridging this particular Aesop fable and see if we can relate it to mental stability, mental health, in some sort of way. One of the things that I do try to do is stretch the boundaries and do something a little different. And so I can't say this is different, but let me just, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, specifically you adults out there, reminding you that you're never too old to learn a lesson. The title is The Eagle and the Arrow. It seems that an eagle was soaring through the air when suddenly it heard the whiz of an arrow, and it felt itself wounded to death. Slowly it fluttered down to the earth, with its life blood pouring out of it. Looking down upon the arrow with which it had been pierced, it found that the shaft of the arrow had been feathered with one of its own plumes. Alas, it cried as it died. Now, before I give out the moral of this particular story, I want Walter first to try to attempt. Now, if you can't figure it out, just say so, okay? All right. It's not a test of wit. It's just an Aesop fable. Okay. So, Walter, what do you think is the moral or the lesson here?
I would like to pass that on to somebody else for interpretation.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Tanisha, what do you think the moral is?
You got to read it again because I was lost.
Can you
read it again for us? Okay.
Okay, well, listen, check it out. I'm going to just give you the most important part. And, Walter, you pay attention as well. An eagle was flying through the sky. Suddenly it heard an arrow whiz by and found out, as it looked at its body, it had been pierced with the arrow. So as it was fluttering for its life and falling closer to the ground, it looked down at the arrow. The eagle looked down at the arrow and said, "Oh, my goodness, I've been shot with an arrow that looks like me," and then dies.
Yeah, so I've been shot with an arrow that looks like me and died. So it sounds like, you know, like someone of your own, you know, either backstabbed you or, I guess tried to, like, it was a sense of jealousy for you. So, you know, they ended up backstabbing you, trading you, and taking you out for their own personal gain. And you see that happening a lot, especially in our society, where, you know, you're jealous, and people would do it to their own people just for their own personal gain. So that's what I believe.
Okay. Now, that's what Walter thinks. I don't want anybody else to think the same thing. Right, but that's your interpretation, and we're going to say, because it is your answer, it's right. Mr. Harris, oh, wait a minute, let's go back to Tanisha. Tanisha, you have any analysis, any idea?
Well, Walter did a very good job. I guess what I get from it, so if the eagle was flying in the sky, and then he seen the arrow pierced him. So I guess I would take from it, always be aware of your surroundings and who you are around in order, I guess, to always be prepared in life. I guess that's what I get from it. and know how to bandage your wounds in the midst of whatever you're going through. I guess you got to know the good, the pros and the cons, and then you'd be able to outweigh and always pay attention. And it brings me to discernment, to be discern what's around you and pay attention to the signs.
Okay. You know, while that's not the moral, you and Walter have provided insight for us to actually look into and think about. Because both of you, while you're, that is not the moral of the particular fable, both of you have provided information and insight that's important for us to remember. Okay, so Mr. Harris, you know, with all your feedback in the background, it's your turn. Okay. Maybe that's not too bad.
Yeah, because I was just to piggyback on what Walter Antonisha said, you know, the fact that he, when he looked down, in my mind, I was saying when he looked down and saw that one of the feathers that was guiding the arrow was an eagle's feather also, that sometimes you have to take some part of, you know, your enemy will take some part of you in order to attack you with the same thing.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
That, sounds like everyone, Mr. Harris, hit on your head.
The moral is sometimes your enemy will use some parts of you, or your enemy will use you against you. So you can find that sometimes you are your own enemy, or your enemy will use you against yourself. Okay, trying to say it a different way.
Yeah, well, I hate to jump back in there though, but you know, I came to that conclusion based on what Walter and Tanisha said. So, you know, they get just as much credit. And when it comes down to morals of the story, it's just the writer's interpretation of what the moral is. And that doesn't necessarily make it what it really is.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Well, I agree. But how about this, since I still have you on the line, you know, don't go anywhere. What do you think how this relates to mental health? Is there any relation whatsoever?
Yeah, well, yes, because a lot of times a lot of the problems that come up mentally that we have is that we kind of overthink the things that are already around us, and we put different connotations on what should be normal to us, and we like overthink it and come up with a whole completely different scenario. Whereas if we would just try to calm down and relate, not just thinking about yourself, ask people around you what's going on. See what their experiences are and kind of combine all of those things together. And, you know, and with this whole moral and with the arrow, you know, there's some pieces of truth in whatever is destroying you. So you need to kind of look for that piece to let it help you.
Okay. Let me get Walter and Tanisha back in here real fast. Tanisha, you see any mental health relationship here whatsoever? And I know
yeah,
you're
definitely.
Not an expert, but I just want you to speak from the heart.
Yeah, no, definitely. I guess when Mr. Harris brought up the part is when your enemy can use your weakness. And I guess I would take, for example, like people temper. Enemy could keep provoking you for you to get into anger. And once you get into anger, you're not thinking straight, and then you end up doing something you're not supposed to do. So you could take it from that aspect. But then where does the mastery of self come in when you don't allow people to create, to get you to be angry or take you out of your zone? Or the same thing, allow people to control your energy, because it's always about energy. It's always about negative and positive. So in the midst of the negative energy that you're going through, how do you balance back out to always be to be at a balance and always be in control? So that's what I would take from the mental aspect. How do we always stay in control of our emotions and always get the better outcome of what we need? And so that would be, self-practice, that you always have to improve yourself, and that's a part of mental health.
Okay. Walter, a comment, question?
Just to piggyback on what Tanisha said, you have to learn how to control your emotions, especially in now's world, because a lot of people try to, trigger those emotions, especially if they know that you have it. What they'll do is they'll try to trigger those, and sometimes, you lose control of it, and you start doing things that, you'll regret doing later. So just being able to put yourself in a calmer, environment, being able to find ways to tune out what other people say, and just to stay more calm is really going to help you. So, yeah, that's what I got.
Okay. I want to commend each and every one of you for doing a great job in deconstructing that particular and drawing, more importantly, the relationship of this particular, and like Mr. Harris said, it's not right or wrong. Everybody's right on this one. Okay, so the moral just simply said that we often give our enemies the means for our own destruction. And boy, oh boy, if you allow somebody to push your buttons, then that is never going to be a good thing. And we all are emotional creatures of emotion. But learning how to control ourselves, like Tanisha said, having self-control would definitely be an advantage in your favor, and not let anybody do that. Now, if you are having any type of substance abuse or suffering from mental health, depression, or you just need somebody to talk to, now, one of the things that I'm set on is that during this particular climate in our society, and not just because of the pandemic, but just because, right, there's a 1-800 number that you can contact someone that is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just to be able to talk to someone. That number is 1-800-662-4357. That number, again, is 1-800-662-4357. One more time, 1-800-662-HELP. That's 4357. Now, musically, we're going to continue. And when we come back, we're going to swing into things with more music, which we've already heard. But now, a jazz. that was a cold ending, right? But that being said, let us continue. It's now time for our segment of Curtains, which is going to be produced by none other than our student host, Walter Pierce. Curtains is an exposure and analysis of the work and what's gone on behind the stage. You see, many recording artists have, you know, reaped the benefits of their music from the community. But this particular segment talks about what the community has gained from the artist and the artist's actual contribution to the community. Curtains is a review of the musical growth and history and the impact of a particular style and genius on the general moods and attitudes of the listening audience. Musical and lyrical consciousness presented by the artist over a period of time and music releases. Curtains serves best as an introduction to and an exploration of a particular artist, and this morning, his genius and his involvement in influencing all people's style and creativity in the world today. Now, I hand it back over to you, Mr. Walter Pierce. Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Yes, good morning. And again, when we talk about Curtains, we talk about behind the scenes, behind the stage. So I want to talk about, you know, the Bob Marley Foundation. And the Marley family continue to provide philanthropic support through the Bob Marley Foundation in order to continue and honor the memory of the Honorable Robert Nestor Marley. OM, and to perpetuate the spiritual, cultural, social, and musical ideas and goals which guided and inspired him during his life. Depicted in his music, Bob Marley had a concern for people of all races, age, and religion who were at risk and vulnerable, hence the family intent and motivation is to fulfill the vision of the Honorable Robert Nestor Marley, hence the development of the foundation vision upon these guiding principles, aiming at relieving poverty while reaching those in need through love and brotherhood. The vision of the Bob Marley Foundation is to positively impact those around us through education, culture, health care, and sustainable development while enhancing lasting change with one love, one heart, one voice. And, you know, they have values here. It includes honesty, commitment, transparency, accountability, and integrity. And, you know, this is just one of the few examples of how, you know, Bob Marley cared for other people. You know, even though his family continued on the legacy with this foundation, it was really started with Bob Marley, you know, for his care for all people around the world and wanted to be able to help as many people as possible, especially those who are struggling. So, you know, shout out to his family for helping continue the vision of what Bob Marley had to be able to help others with the legacy that he has left. And we could argue and talk about, you know, the great music that he has made being just the amazing music that he has made, and people, you know, love to hear that. But somebody like Bob Marley is also a great philanthropist and cares a lot about people. And that is just as important as his music. So shout out to Bob Marley. And, you know, I'd like to pass on to Mr. Harris to probably talk a little bit more about the, you know, the musical side of Bob Marley.
Yeah, I had an uncle. My uncle Les was from Jamaica. And as I was coming up, I heard a lot of, you know, Jamaican music, a lot of soca, a lot of reggae. And, you know, Bob Marley wasn't the first one, but he was the first one to reach international acclaim. You know, the whole idea of the Rastafarians was dealing basically in truth. And, you know, regardless of who you are, if you were about doing the right thing, they were down with you. You know, and Bob Marley definitely epitomized those type of goals and characteristics in his own life through his music and through everything else. You know, and it's, and like the foundation says, his family is definitely following in his footsteps. You know, and it's good to know that even though he's been gone for a long time, you know, his concepts of how we should be living together haven't faded. And, you know, hopefully more people will get in tune with those type of understandings about people, because like Mr. Bay always says that we're only one people anyway. There's only the human race, you know, and then we use colors because we're still thinking like little kids. But he was able to transcend that. And we need more folks like that, whether here or gone.
Bye.
know, while life is about a lot of different things, one thing is for sure, sharing ideas, information, and just, you know, thinking critically is important. And so today we presented the outspoken and controversial American civil rights leader, Reverend Al Sharpton, and we talked about financial literacy and the importance of United States savings bonds. Remember those? And more importantly, the Jamaican singer, songwriter, and pioneer of reggae, right, Mr. Bob Robert Nestor Marley. And now I'd like to hand it over to Walter to close us out.
I would like to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations, live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. Quest Youth Radio is the
everybody.
Best.
Everybody.
The radio. Best youth radio.
Youth radio. Thank you again.